WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The mad genius and tormented artist are clichés of popular culture, but there's some truth behind those clichés. Psychiatrist Kay Jamison investigates the connection between manic depressive illness and the artistic temperament in her new book, Touched by Fire. She's found that there's something about the experience of prolonged periods of melancholia, broken by episodes of manic intensity, that leads to insights about the human condition. She writes about some of the celebrated writers, artists, and composers who she believes suffered from mood disorders, including Lord Byron, Virginia Woolf, Robert Lowell, Vincent van Gogh, William Blake, and Charles Ives. Jamison is a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and co-author of a medical text on manic depressive illness. I asked Jamison about the cliché of the mad genius.
The word madness probably is unfortunate because, in fact, most people who have manic depressive illness aren't really mad, and most people who have manic depressive illness are really quite normal most of the time. But the relationship that used to be thought of as just madness and artistic genius has really been narrowed down, I think, in the last 10 or 15 years to being a particular kind of mental instability, and that is manic depressive illness and also depressive illness.
There's a chicken and egg question that comes to mind for me. Does creativity and the sensitivity and perception that go along with it, does that lead to manic depression, or does manic depression lead to the kind of introspection related to creativity?
Well, I think it's really much more the latter. I think that it's more the case that people who have a particular kind of temperament, a particular kind of wiring, a particular kind of sensitivity, introspection, reflection, whatever, tend to go into the arts and gravitate into the arts. Also, the genetics of the illness are such that you really aren't going to become manic depressive unless you have the genetic predisposition to it. It's not to say that there isn't an interaction, and I think there is. I mean, that a particular person with a particular genetic vulnerability to manic depressive illness might go into the arts. There might be some stresses that then trigger off the initial, you know, episode or something through a lack of sleep or stress. But it's certainly not going to cause manic depressive illness in a person who isn't already wired that way.
What are the symptoms of manic depression?
Well, it's really a wide variety of symptoms, but it actually turns out that it's probably the most reliably diagnosed illness in psychiatry, I think unquestionably the most reliably diagnosed. And they're really symptoms of mood and thinking and energy and behavior. In the depressive states, when people are depressed, it's really a slowing down of the entire being. People become lethargic, they lack energy, they lack drive, they lose pleasure, a sense of pleasure in their normal activities, things that usually give them pleasure. Things become gray, flat, colorless. Really, it's less a sad mood than a flat mood and a feeling dead inside. In terms of thinking changes in depression, people get confused often. They get indecisive. Their thinking slows down. People who often are very decisive and fast thinking slow down and can't think with their usual fluidity of thought. Thinking becomes very morbid and obsessive often. People really start withdrawing socially. They start withdrawing from friends and other people. They start withdrawing from colleagues. Their normal interests just come to a grinding halt for all intents and purposes. Sleep gets very disturbed. People tend to sleep. In the case of manic depressive illness, people tend to sleep far too much usually. They may ordinarily sleep 7 hours a night, and people will start sleeping 10, 15 hours a day, sometimes 20 hours a day. In major depression, people really will sometimes have difficulty getting to sleep or staying asleep once they've gotten to sleep. On the other hand, when people get manic, it's really quite the opposite. You see people much more speeded up, highly energetic, highly enthusiastic, full of plans and interests, and things that ordinarily are not interesting all of a sudden become interesting. People start projects and plans. They start staying up later and later each night to the point of getting only 2 or 3 hours of sleep, sometimes no sleep at all. People get very irritable. People in extreme forms of mania get violent, assaultive, very paranoid, and again, in extreme forms can be delusional and hallucinate.
What about depression? Depression without the mania, is that related to manic depression?
Yes. Depression and manic depressive illness are very closely related. And very often what you will see is actually, and frequently is the case with artists and writers, that people will be diagnosed as having depressive illness rather than manic depressive illness, because the very mild manic states are not seen, and indeed they often are not, disturbing to the person or to the individual. In fact, that's when people often feel that they are most creative and get their most work done. So they aren't diagnosed as having manic depressive illness. They're diagnosed as having depressive disease.
One of the symptoms of mania, the way you describe it, is an incredible belief in the importance of your work and your ideas. That's something you almost have to have as an artist, although you know, so many artists have this interesting combination of insecurity and faith in themselves.
Absolutely. No, I think that's very true. I think one of the things, I mean, clearly you don't have to have manic depressive illness to be an artist. I mean, that goes without saying. And likewise, you don't have to have manic depressive illness to have an extraordinary sense of yourself and your work and the value of your work. But what you often see in manic depressive illness is that when people are high, and actually when they're normal, they feel a certainty in the convictions and in their beliefs. And this is very advantageous to them because they often get criticized a great deal.
I think an issue for a lot of artists who suffer from mood disorders is if they get treatment for it, especially if it's a chemical treatment, will it not only cure their problem, will it cure them of their gift? Will they lose their gift?
Right. Well, I think that's a very long-standing question, and I think it's a very real and an important question. And I think it's the one that the medical community, the psychiatric community, is going to have to take very seriously. I think many in the medical community do take it seriously, but I think perhaps the side effects of some of the medications have not been dealt with perhaps as effectively as they could. I think there's several things. It's a complicated issue. It's like manic depressive illness in general. It's very hard to understand or reconcile that an illness can have both very positive aspects to it and very negative aspects to it. And that's one of the things that makes manic depressive illness so interesting but also difficult to comprehend in some ways. Likewise, the treatment is very complicated. I think there's no question that lithium and the anticonvulsant medications that are used to treat manic depressive illness have prevented suicide, and the studies on that are very consistent. No one is creative when they're dead by suicide. No one's creative when they're 6 feet under or in four-point restraints on a psychiatric ward, or when they're morbidly depressed or wildly psychotic. I think that's a given. Likewise, as I said, it's a disease. It gets worse over time, and it gets harder to treat over time, so that you may start off with a mild case, and it may progress to a much worse case.
Are there any case studies of artists who have taken chemical therapy for mood disorders and how the prescription has affected their work?
Well, yes, there are. I mean, for a lot of reasons, obviously, confidentiality. It's difficult because the medications that are being used are actually reasonably new additions to medicine. Robert Lowell certainly was on lithium. He felt he was more productive and creative. I think that's a little bit controversial. There are people who have been studied. There are two studies of artists and writers who, in fact, pointed out that they felt like they were more productive on lithium than they had been before lithium. However, there are also side effects to lithium, and one of the things that's good now is that people now tend to be kept on much lower levels of lithium than used to be the case 5 or 10 years ago. And many of the side effects that were dulling to people are not as much of a problem now. And likewise, the anticonvulsants don't tend to have the same kind of effects on energy and mood and thinking that lithium alone had. So I think that the medications now are more sophisticated. From my point of view, the most important thing is that people have choices. If you look at Byron and Schumann and Tennyson and Coleridge, they all went to their doctors. They were desperate. Van Gogh, was voluntarily admitted after he'd been involuntarily admitted. These people wanted help. They desperately wanted help. They were miserably unhappy. They were often suicidal. They didn't have any choices. I mean, people now have choices.
As you point out, bizarre behavior is often considered normal if it occurs in an artist.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that's affected the way we treat artists in America and also the way the psychiatric profession treats artists?
Well, I think it's in a funny sort of way, it's led to a certain amount of discrimination, because I think that, you know, on the one hand, you really don't want to reduce just because somebody's moody or eccentric or strange or a bit bizarre. That doesn't mean the person needs to be on medication or be in psychotherapy or anything of the sort. You want to have a wide tolerance for, you know, individual behavior. On the other hand, you don't want to say, well, this person is an artist, therefore it's perfectly understandable that this person is miserably unhappy, suicidal, can't produce, can't write, can't think, can't hold down a relationship. You know, that's not fair. Again, I think it's just that you want to give people choices about what they do with their lives, and they may opt. They may say, this is what I want to do. I don't want to be treated.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Kay Redfield Jamison, the author of the new book, Touched with Fire, Manic Depressive Illness and the Artistic Temperament. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about manic depressive illness and the artistic temperament. My guest is Kay Redfield Jamison. She's a professor of psychiatry at Johns Hopkins University. In your book, you say that manic depression is indisputably genetic. Now, I was reading a recent New York Times article that says that new studies can't find a gene that would be responsible for it. So scientists now think that mental illnesses are likely to be a result of many genes malfunctioning in subtle ways. What do you think?
Well, I think that those things aren't incompatible. I think it is indisputably genetic. I think that the family studies, the adopted twin studies, the evidence, I think, is overwhelming that it's genetic. That one hasn't found the genes doesn't mean it isn't genetic. I mean, one hasn't found the actual gene for Huntington's disease, for example, but that doesn't mean it isn't a genetic illness. I think that it will almost certainly be more than one gene. I don't think very many people think it's going to be a single gene, and it's bound to be complicated. But the issues that arise from it being genetic are the same. It doesn't make any difference what the underlying mechanism ends up being, how complicated, whether it's a single gene, 5, 10, 15 genes interacting in a complex sort of way. The genetic issues remain the same, the ethical issues.
Can you tell me more about what you think the connection is between manic depression and the ability to write or paint or sing or perform, you know, the ability to create? Why are those two related?
Well, I think that there are a lot of things that go into it. One is that obviously you don't just take somebody who has average ability, give them manic depressive illness, and make them a great artist or painter. You take somebody who has enormous ability anyway. But what you do is you're adding a temperament, and you're adding a way of thinking, and you're adding a range of emotional experiences. So when people get mildly manic, for example, and you can show this in psychological tests, you can show it in any number of ways, people start thinking much more fluidly, they think more quickly, they have many more associations. So if I were to say to you, give you the word frog, and ask you to associate to the word frog, you could come up with a sort of X number of responses to that. And you would come up with a certain number of original responses to that. When people get mildly manic, what you find is they get both more, they come up with more responses and more original responses. People become more fiery, impulsive. They take more chances. The associational patterns just set off like wildfire across the mind often. And you can see this literally on PET scans and so forth. You can see that just the brain is lit up like a Christmas tree when people are mildly manic. Likewise, when people get mildly depressed, I think that people get more melancholic, they get more reflective. They think about things that most of us don't want to think about. Denial tends to be the first thing to go. And traditionally, we have asked artists and writers to do our dealing with the grim aspects of life for us. And in fact, that's what happens when people get depressed. They tend to deal with issues of how ephemeral it all is, how short life is, how transient it is, how morbid perhaps the core of things actually is. But very importantly, it's the fact that people are going in and out of these states. They're feeling normal at one moment and depressed another, and feeling very enthusiastic, and having to reconcile the differences across these states of high enthusiasms and suicidal thinking and whatever.
In your practice, do you treat artists with manic depression any differently than you would treat someone who wasn't an artist and was suffering from the same problem?
Well, it depends on the individual. I mean, there are a lot of people who have manic depressive illness who aren't artists and writers, but who love the arts, for example, or who are sensitive, or who have problems where they have to write or have to produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, you know, I mean, I live in Washington. There are a lot of politicians who need to be able to function on a day-to-day basis. That's true of people in business. It's true of people in the law. It's true of people in medicine. It's true of people, whatever job or profession they hold down. People need to be able to function in order to maintain relationships and maintain jobs. I think in the case of people in the arts, by and large, you can encourage people to read more, perhaps, along biographical lines, because people have written a lot about what it feels like to have severe depression and manic depressive illness. But then I recommend that for a lot of my patients. I recommend that they read biographies or that they read, you know, original writings or poetry or whatever.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Sure.
Kay Redfield Jamison is the author of the new book Touched with Fire, Manic Depressive Illness and the Artistic Temperament. She's a professor at Johns Hopkins University. This is Fresh Air.